Good evening, and welcome to the KRFP Evening Report for Wednesday, September 7th, 2011. I'm Lee Robartis in the news tonight. Idaho Transportation Department approves U.S. Highway 12 ExxonMobil megaloads. Unannounced ExxonMobil tar sands shipment rolls through Moscow last night. Another plan for tonight and tomorrow night. Moscow City Council sends megaload issue to Administrative Committee. And Idaho Redistricting Commission adjourns without coming up with a plan they can agree on for legislative districts. We'll have details on those stories and more coming up on the KRFP Evening Report, but first, world headlines from Feature Story News, Free Speech Radio News, and the International News Net. And live in the KRFP studios in Moscow, Idaho, I'm Lee Robartis, and this is the KRFP Evening Report. The Idaho Transportation Department Director Brian Ness today rejected plaintiffs' motions for reconsideration of a decision by a hearing officer in a contested case hearing objecting to the use of U.S. Highway 12 for ExxonMobil tar sand shipments weighing up to 590,000 pounds and two lanes wide. Ness's order is the final word on the U.S. Highway 12 megaloads unless plaintiffs take the issue to state court. Last year, the Idaho Supreme Court turned down a request by the plaintiffs, who are tourism business owners, mostly along the federally designated Clearwater and Locksaw Wild and Scenic River corridors. The High Court told plaintiffs jurisdiction over the loads resides with the Idaho Transportation Department and a hearing officer hired by the department. Ness wrote in his announcement today, hearing officer Duff McGee's August 15th decision in favor of ExxonMobil followed correct legal procedures. The decision applies to the more than 200 megaloads ExxonMobil wants to transport from the port of Lewiston along the narrow winding highway. The components are manufactured in Korea and are part of a bitumen extraction plant to be built near Fort McMurray, Alberta. Legally, the route is still blocked by a Montana judge's temporary injunction issued in July. Missoula County and three environmental groups have sued the Montana Transportation Department for giving approval to the megaloads to use two-lane highways in Montana on the grounds the agency did not adequately consider environmental impacts of new turnouts on wetlands. Meanwhile, the Moscow-based environmental group Friends of the Clearwater today filed a petition to intervene in the proposed megaloads from the firm Nickel Brothers. Nickel Brothers wants to transport their megaloads on U.S. Highway 12 over Lolo Pass to a Weyerhaeuser plant in Alberta. The Idaho Transportation Department has already issued permits for two of the Weyerhaeuser loads that will be two lanes wide and weigh more than 400,000 pounds. The loads were scheduled to travel last week but were delayed. Friends of the Clearwater is only asking to intervene in the nine proposed Nickel Brother loads that are two lanes wide, but not in the smaller loads the company wants to transport along the route for Weyerhaeuser. In a statement released today, Friends of the Clearwater said, with the Nickel Brothers shipments, quote, indeed, the industrialization of the corridor is underway. U.S. Highway 12 is heavily used by tourists, kayakers, backpackers, and rafters and provides access to central Idaho wilderness areas. An unannounced oversized load came through Moscow last night, heading north on U.S. 95 and accompanied by Idaho State Troopers. The load was much smaller than the first two ExxonMobil tar sand split megaloads, which weighed 413,000 and 322,800 pounds, respectively. However, when smaller ExxonMobil tar sand shipments came through town starting in late July, the Idaho Transportation Department put out a public notice at least a day in advance. In the case of last night's load, Wild Idaho Rising Tide members say City Council member Tom Lamar said city police and other city council members were notified the load would be coming through yesterday afternoon. one of the trucks following the 20 to 30 feet behind last night's load was owned by Mammoth, which is the hauling company moving the ExxonMobil tar sand shipments. I spoke with David Hall, Romney Baim, and Helen Yost of Wild Idaho Rising Tide, who watched the load roll down Washington Street late last night.
About 11:15, I think, in the evening, pilot car came through, and the flaggers were out at 3rd and Main Street. And we asked if he knew what company was coming through, and he's kind of hemmed and hawed and said he didn't know who it was. And he didn't know what time it was coming. Another flagger from across the road called out, and he said it'd probably be about 17 minutes. So it would have been maybe 10 or 15 minutes after 11 that he thought it would be coming through.
The load itself looked massive. I mean, the bed of the truck was L-shaped and looked massive. The equipment wasn't as large as some of the loads, but differently shaped. That I don't know how to describe it.
Yeah, it looked a lot like some of the mini mega loads of ExxonMobil's that have come through previously, in that it had, you know, it was sort of one of these structures that had a lot of pipes and parts and pieces, and it was definitely 17 about. And what sort of tipped us off that it could possibly be ExxonMobil was we've seen other loads hauled by Riyash and perhaps other companies come through. They've never had a flagger on every single corner. And ironically, there was a Moscow police person on bike, and he pointed out to us the Mammoet truck that went through, and that's the name of the company that's been hauling for ExxonMobil.
And you haven't known Mammoet to haul for any other company lately in this area?
No, we haven't seen them doing any other loads. It was a different flagging company, though. It was a Western Trucking Company, and mostly it's been Mountain West that's been hauling for these other ExxonMobil loads.
Flagging for them.
Flagging for them, sorry.
And you saw Idaho State Troopers accompanying this load?
I saw two of the Idaho State Police cars.
There was one, apparently, Moscow City Police man blocking the crosswalk at 3rd, and he was instructing another police officer to block the crosswalk up at 2nd Street in Main when it came through.
You mean 2nd and Washington?
2nd and Washington, yes.
Where all the protesters have been.
Right, but there's basically nobody, there were no protesters.
Well, no, the public notice itself was even really limited. Best we can tell, notice was just sent to our police force here in Moscow to just give them the heads up that some loads are coming through, but they didn't even know the dimensions of these loads. And also a few city council, or I guess all of the city council members received notice, but there was also no clue as to the dimensions, the timing, even what company or hauler these loads belong to.
And what time did they get that information?
I believe this afternoon, and there are also other ones expected tomorrow night and the night after of the same company, I assume.
There are other loads expected tomorrow night?
Tomorrow night and the night after.
That was Romney Baim speaking last night in the KRFP studios. You also heard from Helen Yost and David Hall of Wild Idaho Rising Tide in that interview. Yost later contacted KRFP and said she spoke with an ITD official who said that more notice for last night's shipments was not given because the loads are within legal weight. The loads are 20 to 23 feet wide, 14 feet high, and approximately 75 to 76 feet long, and they do take up both lanes. Today, the Idaho Transportation Department issued a statement saying the loads are owned by ExxonMobil and heading to the Alberta tar sands. They confirmed that another load would be coming through tonight and another one tomorrow night. The loads are lighter than the split mega loads ExxonMobil has brought through Moscow, with last night's load weighing 73,900 pounds and tonight's load expected to be 69,700 pounds. The announcement does not give the weight for tomorrow night's load. The loads will be wide at more than 20 feet wide each. They will take up two lanes of US 95. The Moscow City Council voted 4-2 last night to send the issue of the ExxonMobil tar sands shipments coming through the city to the council's administrative committee for further discussion of the various issues involved. So far, two of the 66 largest split megaloads have passed through Moscow on their way from the port of Lewiston to the Alberta tar sands near Fort McMurray, Alberta. The first split megaload weighed 413,000 pounds, and the second split megaload weighed 322,800 pounds. Both took up two lanes of US 95, temporarily blocking traffic at times. At last night's meeting, City Sustainable Environment Commission Chair Scott Fidel presented a letter from the commission to the council, which asks the council to, quote, rescind its earlier position statement that welcomes and encourages the megaloads to move through Moscow, request information from ITD concerning knowledge and plans for increased use of US 95 as an industrial corridor through the area, and issue a new position statement that reflects the concerns, desires, and sustainable efforts of the City of Moscow and its citizens, unquote. Councilmember Dan Karskellen made the motion to send the letter and other megaload issues to the administrative committee, which was seconded by Tom Lamar. Here's Councilmember Lamar, followed by Wayne Krause and Sue Scott.
Given the level of protest that we've seen for the loads, there's a lot of interest for the for us in the city to continue to have discussions and considerations of these loads. And I think it would behoove the city to consider some of these issues. I would particularly like to see the city or the state of Idaho address questions of the cost of the loads versus the amount of money that is being raised for the loads through the permit process. I understand that we are going to, we as a city are going to start looking at the issue of the cost to police escorts through the city of Moscow next week. So I think that there's an opportunity at the Administrative Commission to take a look at several of these issues simultaneously.
I agree with a lot of what you said, Tom, and I think that the permitting process of these large loads should be predicated upon the weight of the vehicle, and we probably should be getting more money for these. I think that's definitely something to look at. Obviously, that's something that has to be looked at the state level. If we wanted to send a letter, I wouldn't be opposed to that at all. The first one from the SEC, however, says represent all of the city's constituents. That's kind of like trying to keep all the people happy all the time. And if there's one thing I've learned, that doesn't happen. I don't know what type of a statement that could be made that could represent all of the city's constituents, other than a benign statement like was already made. In the last few weeks, it's been commented that the council has actually welcomed these loads, and that wasn't the purpose of the statement. The statement was a benign statement saying we can see no structural reason why. So my question goes back to, how do you represent all the city's constituents in a statement?
Part of the reason why I didn't take a stand on oil sands is that it's not in the city's jurisdiction. We could yell and scream all we wanted, but we have nothing to say about it. I think the comments and the protests should go to the people who can make those decisions, one of them being our beloved governor, who basically gave his carte blanche before anybody even knew about it.
That was Moscow City Councilmember Sue Scott, preceded by Wayne Krause, and we started that clip with Tom Lamar. In May, the council voted 4-0 with one abstention in favor of a statement saying they saw no problem with the ExxonMobil megaloads coming through the city. Council member Walter Steed commented on the vote that occurred in May before he voted against sending the issue back to the administrative committee last night.
I was the one that made the motion. I'll tell you that I did. It does not welcome anybody. Read it and read it and read it, and I would just defy anyone to tell me it welcomes the megaloads. The purpose of that motion, the intent of that motion, was to do what I thought we had accomplished, which was to get past it and let Highway 95 serve the purpose for which it was built, constructed, and is operated, and not to sit here over and over and over again and discuss this issue. My belief is that at least half, if not the majority, of the citizens of Moscow don't care about the megaloads. They're living their lives. If they hear about them, they don't care. I was surprised to see protesters downtown. I would have lost the bet, because I would have bet nobody would do that. I don't know who they were, where they came from. I was surprised to see them. People that are actually protesting bring the megaloads through. The ITD permit cost, I will support getting Tom Trail, Shirley Ringo, Dan Schmidt to write a change to the state law to raise those permit fees. I don't know what they are. I don't know how they're calculated, but I truly believe they're not paying back ITD for their time and effort on loads of this size. They probably should be raised. Again, it's not a welcoming statement. It was done in an intent to cut off debate on something that I saw that we could not control or stop.
That was Moscow City Council Member Walter Steed. The other council member who voted against sending the issue to the Administrative Committee was Tim Brown. Dan Karskellen, Tom Lamar, Sue Scott, and Wayne Krause voted in favor. The next City Council Administrative meeting is Monday, September 12th at 4:30 p.m. at City Hall. The Idaho Redistricting Commission adjourned late last night at the end of their 92-day session without reaching an agreement on how to split the state's 35 legislative and 2 congressional districts. Secretary of State Ben Isursa said he will ask the state Supreme Court to direct the commission to try to come up with a map at least 4 of the 6 commissioners can agree on. A major sticking point is whether a provision in the state constitution requiring districts to split as few counties as possible takes legal precedence over a 2009 state law that requires districts have a state or federal highway connecting different parts of the district unless 5 out of 6 commissioners waive that rule. Isursa, who is a Republican, says a 2002 Idaho Supreme Court decision indicates the constitutional provision requiring as many counties as possible remain whole would be more legally compelling. The Democrats on the commission agree with Isursa. At yesterday's meeting, Republican Commissioner Lou Esposito called the Democrats geographically challenged and greedy, while Democrat Alan Anderson called Republican Commissioner Evan Frazier unprofessional. Republican Commissioner Lorna Finman of Rathdrum and Democrat Julie Kane of Lapway did reach a compromise on the 7 northernmost districts, but the compromise map, as seen on the Redistricting Commission webpage, appears to split Moscow between legislative districts. The proposal splits Latah County into 3 legislative districts, and according to the Moscow Pullman Daily News, most of Moscow would be in a district to the north. The map puts the northwestern corner of Latah County, along with a good portion of Moscow, in a district with most of Benoit County, all of Shoshone County, and the southern part of Kootenai County. By magnifying the PDF on the map, it appears most of Moscow would be in District 5 to the north, but areas south and east of the city would be in a new District 7, with most of the rest of Latah County, all of Clearwater and Idaho counties, plus the southeastern corner of Benoit County. Julietta in southeastern Latah County would be in a new District 6 with all of Nez Perce and Lewis counties. However, commissioners did not vote on that particular map because they still disagreed on how to split the Ada County area. The map, which splits Northern Idaho into 7 districts, called the Compromise Map on the Redistricting Commission's website, would have Republican Senators Sean Keogh and Joyce Broadsword in the same district. And also in the new District 2, there will be three incumbent state representatives running for two seats, Republican Phil Hart of Athol, Republican Vito Barbieri of Dalton Gardens, and Republican Marge Chatteron of Coeur d'Alene. In the new District 5, there will be four incumbent representatives running for two House seats. They would be Republican Representative Tom Trail of Moscow, Democratic Representative Shirley Ringo of Moscow, Republican Representative Dick Harwood of St. Mary's, and Republican Representative Shannon McMillian of Silverton. While Lewis Clark State College in Lewiston reported an increase in enrollment of 3.3%, the University of Idaho's student enrollment grew by only 10% from last year, less than 0.1%. The student population at Lewis Clark State College grew to a record 4,693 students, the ninth straight record semester. Meanwhile, the nearly flat growth rate of this year's student population at the University of Idaho fell short of University President Dwayne Nellis's goal of 5% per year. However, this fall's low enrollment at the UI did not come as a surprise to some university officials. UI Assistant Vice President for Enrollment Management Steve Neuheisel told the Daily News he expected a low enrollment for out-of-state students due to changes in university budgets and financial aid packages. The university has reduced its participation in the program Western Undergraduate Exchange, which helps out-of-state students by allowing them to pay only 1.5 times the in-state tuition. Although the University of Idaho has a new financial aid program called Discover Idaho in order to assist out-of-state students, Neuheisel said many students may not have taken the time to learn about the program. Some of the shortfall in out-of-state student enrollment at the university has been filled in with in-state students. In-state students were up 6% this fall. Nearly three-fourths of this year's incoming freshmen are Idaho residents. Despite the university's low enrollment rate this fall, officials have cited more positive aspects of the incoming student population. They say transfer students increased by 6% to a total of 804, while graduate student population increased by 1.2% to 2,140. Almost 34% of incoming freshmen are from families where neither parent holds a bachelor's degree, and freshman diversity grew by 5%, with 18.6% of new students identified as being members of a minority group. Neuheisel said the university will continue to focus on recruiting more diverse and international students. He's also optimistic the university will reach its goal of 16,000 students by 2020. Forest officials ordered the evacuation of residents in close proximity to the Salt Fire, burning in eastern Idaho, southwest of Salmon, due to increased winds yesterday. The winds caused the fire to spread. In addition to calling for the evacuation of residents, officials ordered the evacuation of crews at the Idaho Cobalt Mining Project and people recreating in the Salmon Chalice National Forest. The officials shut down trailhead and parking access areas for some parts of the Frank Church River of No Return Wilderness. As of late yesterday, the fire had burned nearly 19 square miles. Kevin W. Harpum of rural Stevens County pleaded guilty yesterday to two felonies related to the placement of a backpack bomb along the route of the Martin Luther King Jr. Day Unity March in downtown Spokane, January 17th. In yesterday's plea deal, Harpum admitted to making the bomb, which never exploded, and having racist motives in planting the bomb. The guilty pleas were on charges of attempting to use a weapon of mass destruction, attempting to cause bodily harm with an explosive device, with a racist motive. The guilty pleas were on charges of attempting to use a weapon of mass destruction and attempting to cause bodily injury with an explosive device with a racist motive. Federal Judge Justin Quackenbush must still accept the plea deal. If he does, a trial scheduled for next week in Spokane will be canceled. FBI investigators believe Harpum acted alone. Under the plea deal, charges of using a firearm in relation to a crime of violence and unauthorized possession of an unregistered explosive device will be dismissed. Assistant U.S. Attorney Joe Harrington said Harpum planted the bomb consisting of a 6-inch steel pipe and 100 grams of black powder. Harrington said it was designed to be detonated with a key fob transmitter. Once the suspicious backpack was found by temporary workers who were on duty near the Spokane Convention Center, police rerouted the Unity March. Harrington said it is unclear why Harpum did not set off the bomb, but noted the changed parade route. Defense attorneys are expected to ask Harpum for a 27-year sentence, while prosecutors will ask that he be put away for 32 years. Under the terms of the plea deal, the 37-year-old Harpum will be on probation for life if he is released from prison. Health officials are concerned about the growing rate of Idaho children exempted from immunizations. Since 2005, school exemptions in South Central Idaho have increased more than 62%. Idaho Health and Welfare Department spokesperson Tom Shanahan said exempted children make up nearly 3% of the school population statewide. In the South Central Public Health District, which serves 8 counties, 253 children are exempted from immunizations. Idaho rules state children may be exempted from immunizations if they present relevant medical, religious, or personal reasons for not being immunized. Some studies point to personal beliefs being a major reason for exemptions in Idaho. However, even as exemptions are increasing in Idaho, overall the state has improved its immunization rank from 49th to 42nd in the nation since 2008. Immunization Action Coalition official Diane Peterson said she's worried about outbreaks of disease in pockets of Idaho where a high number of children are exempted. Montana Attorney General Steve Bullock planned on entering the race for Montana governor today with an announcement in Billings. Bullock is expected to leave his attorney general position after one term in order to shift his focus on the 2012 race for governor. Bullock is an increasingly popular Democrat in Montana. He's already had a strong following over $200,000 raised for attorney general reelection, which can be transferred to a race for governor. Current Montana Governor Brian Schweitzer has had success with a large Democratic base in a state that generally leans Republican but can't run for reelection due to term limits. Many have been encouraging Attorney General Bullock to step up and run for governor. Bullock will likely face Republican frontrunner and former U.S. Representative Rick Hill in next year's race. Well, that's it for the KRFP Evening Report for tonight.